You're listening to Food Integrity Now with your host, Carol Gervais. Hello and welcome to Food Integrity Now. I'm Carol Gervais. I'm your host today. At Food Integrity Now, we envision a world without GMOs, a thriving world where our food is safe for our children and our grandchildren. If you share this vision, go to our website and join us. Our show today is brought to you by Biolumina Spirulina, one of the finest whole food supplements on the market. To find out more about Biolumina, go to newphoenixrising.com/beingwell, or just go to the show page and click on the link. I think you're really going to love this product. My guest today is Dr. Judy Carman. Dr. Carman has a Bachelor of Science and also a PhD in medicine from Adelaide University in Southern Australia. She is also an epidemiologist and a biochemist. Dr. Carman is the Associate Professor of Health and the Environment at Flinders University, and she and a team of seven other scientists and co-authors release results of a long-term toxicology study that has found more adverse effects resulting from the consumption of genetically modified foods. You may have heard something about this study, which is sometimes referred to as the GMO pig study. Dr. Carman, welcome to Food Integrity Now.
Thank you for having me on your program.
Well, I'm excited to speak with you today and learn more about your study and let our listeners learn more about it, too. So let's start out at the beginning. Let's talk about why you wanted to conduct this study. It's my understanding that you were somehow connected with Howard Leager, who is a third-generation farmer in Iowa, and he's also the past president of the Farm and Ranch Freedom Alliance. So did he contact you to assist in the study or to conduct the study, or how did that happen?
Yes, he contacted me. He'd been seeing things in pigs for some time associated with GMOs, particularly in inflammation in the gut of pigs, and not just pigs, but also, you know, other farm animals, and also reproductive issues in animals that were fed GMOs. So he contacted me because he'd heard that I was someone who was doing animal feeding studies in GM crops, and he wanted some assistance in how to kind of try and prove whether what he was seeing, whether it was real or not scientifically. So we had long chats over the phone, he in the United States and me in Australia. And together we determined that we could do a feeding study on pigs to answer some of those questions. So that's what we did. We got 168 just weaned pigs. We fed them for over 5 months. So basically from the time they were weaned until the time they were slaughtered. So it was the entire commercial lifespan of pigs. And we fed half of them GM feed and the other half of them non-GM feed, and everyone who had day-to-day hands-on with those pigs was blinded as to which group was fed GM feed and which group was fed the non-GM feed. And the veterinarians doing the autopsies at the end of it were also blinded, so all of the observations were completely unbiased. And we also fed the pigs not just one GM entity at a time, because that's not what people eat in the United States, and it's not what pigs in the United States eat. So it was a combined diet of GM soy and GM maize or corn, and that contained three GM genes in there at the same time. And we fed them for the lifespan of the pig. We then took some blood from the animals towards the end of the experiment. The animals went through a commercial slaughtering facility, an abattoir, and we got the intestines and the basically all of the viscera. So it was the liver, the kidneys, the intestinal system of the pigs. And veterinarians had a really good look at inside those organs. And we also weighed organs, and we also compared dietary intake, and we compared what we saw in the bloods between the GM and the non-GM fed. And we came up with two main findings that completely supported what Howard had been seeing in animals on farms. And that was that we found that the GM-fed female pigs had a 25% increase in the weight of the uterus, which was statistically significant. So something is happening in the uteri of these pigs.
What would that mean?
Well, it could mean quite a few things. And in the paper that we wrote, and people can see this paper on the GMO Judy Carman website, but we talk about various things that could be happening in the uterus of these pigs, all of which have long names, scientific names, and none of which you would want. So there could be a thickening of the uterine lining, there could be polyps, there could be cancerous changes, there could be all sorts of things that could be going on in these uteri. And really there need to be further studies done to determine exactly what's going on.
Wow, that's interesting. And so the veterinarians that were doing these autopsies, they did not know which pigs were fed the GMO grain and which were not. Is that correct?
That is correct indeed.
Okay, so basically you did the study, you fed the two sets of pigs differently. Now, what conclusions did you come to as far as the male and the female pigs? Were there differences there?
There were. Now, the first thing that I've said was about the reproductive, the difference in the uterus weights in the female pigs. We don't know what might be going on in the reproductive system of the male pigs, because these are pigs for in a commercial piggery, and they, you know, end up in the food supply. So the male pigs were neutered very early on in their life. So basically they had their testicles cut off. So that means that we don't know what the reproductive health might be in male pigs eating these grains, and so therefore that work does need to be done. But the other major finding that we had was we looked inside the stomachs of the pigs, and we found a significant difference between the stomachs of the pigs fed the GM feed and those fed the non-GM feed. Now, animals, pigs today in the US, they get fed a finely ground feed, and that tends to cause a little bit of stomach inflammation in the pigs. What we found was that if you feed the pigs GM feed, that inflammation rockets up. So that we compared the amount of stomach inflammation in pigs fed the GM feed and those fed the non-GM feed, and we found that there was over twice as much severe stomach inflammation in pigs fed GM feed, and there was a gender difference there. Female pigs, they were 2.2 times more likely to get severe stomach inflammation if they were fed the GM feed, but the male pigs were 4 times more likely to get this severe stomach inflammation. And when I talk about severe stomach inflammation, I mean that you look at the internal lining of a pig's stomach, it's sort of like a light beige colour in a normal pig. Severe stomach inflammation, they are bright red all over the internal surface of the stomach, a bright cherry red or a fire engine red. And that is not something you would want to have.
Well, that sounds like it's pretty significant. And, you know, it kind of begs the question, if there's digestive problems and stomach inflammation with pigs and reproductive issues with pigs, it makes me wonder what happens in a human stomach.
Indeed, that is the question that I'm asking, because the thing about the digestive system of a pig is it's very similar to the digestive system of a human being. So there's this concern that if we're seeing this in pigs, we may also be seeing it in people.
And there have not been long-term human studies, correct?
Well, there have been no human studies, short-term or long-term. There have been none. Not on the safety assessment of GM material on human health. The only studies that I'm aware of that have been done in people was a study done quite a few years ago now, where they fed some people a GM soy burger and GM soy milk to see whether the GM DNA might actually survive digestion and go into the further down in the intestine. And there was another study done on women to see whether a particular protein produced by certain GM crops might actually be found circulating in their bloodstream and also in their newborn, in the cord blood towards their newborn babies. And they found that that protein was in fact there. So they're the only ones that I'm aware of. The sort of toxicology studies that we did, that we're talking about with this pig study, I'm not aware of a single study that's been done in people.
Are you going to be conducting any further studies in this area?
Yes, I hope to be able to do that.
I'm wondering how the biotech industry, or the industry in general, the GMO industry, how they took your study. Did they try to discredit you, or what kind of backlash have you heard from the industry?
Oh, yes, they have definitely tried to discredit me. But then people who are associated with the GM industry have been trying to do that to me for many years. Because I have raised questions about the safety assessments of GM crops, you know, how well they've been done, how well they've not been done, and the findings that have been found, I think I've had something like 6 attempts to have me subsacked from a university position.
Wow.
Over the years. Yeah, and it's been personal abuse. I've suffered an awful lot of that over the years. So a lot of the people who really try and come on the offensive and try and attack me usually don't have any or very little, actually, expertise in the area of human safety assessments. They're usually people who are associated with trying to make GM crops. And they're plant people, they're plant scientists, they're not human health scientists.
Right.
And often they can't actually comment on the safety assessments of these crops because they don't have the background in this area. And so they resort to personal abuse. And I've suffered an awful lot of personal abuse.
Right. I bet you have. And I understand it's probably also very difficult to conduct some of these studies because of their patenting laws.
Oh, absolutely. It's very, very difficult indeed. So your readers may not understand that, you know, if I want to do some sort of safety testament on rats on aspirin or paracetamol or something like that, I can just go and buy it from a pharmacist and actually then just do those studies. But when it comes to GM crops, there are strong patents on those GM crops, and written in the agreement that you need to sign before you can obtain the materials to test, such as, you know, corn kernels, soybeans or something like that. You can't just go to a seed merchant and buy them. You have to sign a technology user agreement which says, and I've seen some of these technology user agreements, it says that you agree that when you buy those seeds that you will not do any research on those seeds, and you will not give them to anyone else to do research on either. So it becomes very difficult to find the materials to do safety assessments if you're an independent person, that is, independent of the GM industry.
Well, they've covered most of their bases, haven't they, so that they can only be the ones that are legally able to do the tests.
Yeah, well, it does become very difficult for anyone else to do. So that means that most of the safety assessments you see published have actually been done with the permission of the GM industry, if not as part of the GM industry.
Right. And you know, the universities, various universities that may conduct studies, you have to always look at who's funding the studies. And
yes, it might not be exactly clear, directly obvious by actually just looking at the study either, because universities themselves can be funded by GM crop companies. And, you know, there are a number of ways of funding research and funding universities that may not necessarily appear at the end of a study that's published in the peer-reviewed scientific literature where you're supposed to say where your funding's come from.
So what do you think about the Seralini study?
Well, so we're talking about the Seralini study where he fed rats for
right.
2 years. Yeah. Well, one of the things, I mean, he's also come under attack, I know, by the GM industry about the way that study was done and the findings that he found. But what he was trying to do was actually do what the industry does. So he used the same rats that the industry uses. He had the same number of rats in each group that the industry has. It's just that he went further than the industry. He actually fed them for much longer. I mean, one of the problems with the industry studies that are done is they don't feed the GM organism to animals for long enough for cancers to develop. The longest industry study I've seen has gone for 3 months. And that's not long enough for tumours to develop in animals. So Giuseppe Cerellini went further than that, and he fed them for 2 years, and he did find an increase in tumours in animals fed the GMO. But one of the criticisms of Cerellini's study is that he didn't find a lot of statistical significance in his study, but that's because he did what the industry does, and he used small numbers of animals in each group. You know, if you only got 20 rats in a group and you're trying to measure a difference in death rate, then it means that a quarter of the rats in one group have got to die and none in the other before you reach statistical significance. And that's one of the reasons why when Howard Vlieger and I did this study, we actually had much larger numbers of animals in each group so that we could find statistical significance for things that are biologically significant.
So you actually went to Iowa to do this study, correct?
Yes. Howard Vlieger, you know, was able to set up the, you know, he's a pig man. He knows how to do studies on pigs. So the piggery system was set up. The pigs were brought in and the animals were fed. And I came over to Iowa at the end of the experiment when it came time to take blood and set up the autopsy table and have things established for the autopsies on the animals. But Howard and I were in constant communication between the US and Australia, and together we made sure that that study was done really well all the way through.
Right, and you call it a double-blind study. So explain that just for our listeners, exactly what that means.
Well, the concept of double blind is usually used in human studies, which means that the person taking, say we're talking about a pharmaceutical study where you're trying to see whether a new pharmaceutical drug has a benefit to the people who take it. They're called double blinded studies because the person taking the drug doesn't know they're taking it. They don't know whether they're taking it or not. So obviously a pig doesn't know if it's taking a GMO or not. So that concept is sort of pretty well given. But the double blind means that the person who is giving the drug to the patient also doesn't know. So there's no difference in the way that the physician might say, oh, well, you'll feel better on this drug, I'm sure. You know, there are no hints being given. There's no difference in the way that those patients are being managed, whether they're taking the new drug of interest or the old drug or the placebo. And so it was with these pigs. The people who are looking after these pigs did not know whether a particular group of pigs was fed the GM feed or fed the non-GM feed equivalent. They just didn't know. So there was no difference in animal husbandry, no difference in the way that the pigs could be treated or housed or fed or watered or anything that could influence the results.
Wow, it certainly sounds like you covered your bases, and I'm just curious what those who are trying to dispute the study, what are they saying?
Well, they're making stuff up, basically. They're saying all sorts of really interesting stuff which just doesn't exist. Where do I start? I mean, I just sort of don't know, sort of scratching my head in confusion as to kind of where to start with some of the rubbish that's been written about this study that just doesn't make any sense. A lot of it just doesn't make any scientific sense. And a lot of it, I think, is just designed to try and create a smokescreen, to try and create doubt about how this study was done. But, you know, I've got so much expertise in animal feeding studies and in human epidemiological investigations that I know how to set up a study properly. And these studies have been far more thoroughly set up than the usual studies that have been done by the GM industry or people associated with them.
Hmm. Well, that's wonderful, and I really applaud you for doing this and taking this on, because I bet there is a lot of backlash. You know, I know that the Professor Arpad Pusta, who did a study back in the 1990s, and he found ill effects in rats that were fed GMO potatoes. And that study was pretty much buried.
Yes, it was. And he came under an awful lot of fire. He basically lost his job over that. And he was gagged. He was also gagged because under the, you know, conditions of employment that he was under, they could gag him, and they did. They, you know, brought out court orders to say basically, you know, you can't speak about the study. So people who wanted to criticise the study had free rein for quite some time, and he wasn't able to reply to that. But that was a very well-conducted study, and he was a very senior man who'd been doing, who knew what he was doing and did the study well, and he did it properly. And particularly, I mean, it's particularly galling when you see just how bad the studies are that have been done by the GM industry. And if I could, I'll just describe the sort of way that they tend to do these studies. First of all, you know, and the industry and people associated with them will say, oh, there are hundreds of studies, thousands of studies that show that GMOs are safe to eat. But if you look at those studies, they don't do that at all. Basically, the sort of the main type of study that they're talking about are studies where they take certain farm animals and they feed them GMOs, and then they basically work out whether the animals live or die, or whether they perform in an animal husbandry sense. You know, if you're feeding it to, you know, chickens, you want to know that you get a good breast meat yield, things like that. And they will, first of all, if you feed it to chickens, they are so physiologically different to humans that you can't feed chickens and hope that the results will actually be applicable to human beings. For example, their kidneys don't even produce urine. So if a toxicological endpoint is something that you're interested in, such as what effect does the GMO have on liver and kidney health, you can't do it in a chicken. But then, of course, you know, having an outcome that is breast meat yield is not a human health outcome. Otherwise, I'm afraid women, we are much more healthy than men because we have bigger breasts. You know, it's just ridiculous the sorts of outcomes that they say, oh, this shows that, that human beings will be healthy if they actually eat the GM crop. So they're mostly animal production studies. They're not usually human health studies that are not designed to look for outcomes that are relevant to human health and are not fed to animals that are physiologically similar to humans. Of all of the studies that have been done, not very many are actually applicable to human health. Not very many studies have actually been done on rats, for example, for at least 3 months, where you then look for human health outcomes on those rats. But even then, even when the industry does those sorts of studies, they often do find statistical significance in differences that they're measuring between the GM-fed animals and the non-GM-fed animals, but then they just try and explain those away, and they don't do follow-up investigations to try and find out what might really be going on in those animals.
It really gives new meaning to that we really are the human guinea pigs.
Well, yes, and there are a lot of GM crops in the marketplace for which no animal feeding studies, you know, that measure human health endpoints, they just haven't been done. So, I mean, there are at least 100 GM crops on supermarket shelves now, so that have been approved as safe to eat by various regulators around the world. So, yeah, there's not enough evidence, in my view, that they're safe to eat. And then, of course, the independent researchers, such as Sarah Leaney, Apad Pushtai, and myself, when we finally are able to get hold of GMOs and safety assess them, we're tending to find that there are problems. And this just mirrors what goes on in the pharmaceutical industry. I mean, it's well known in medical research that if a pharmaceutical industry does a safety assessment on their crop, that that's one thing. But then once it's commercialised and other people then do repeat follow-up studies where those people are independent of the pharmaceutical company, then that's when you tend to find the adverse effects.
Right, because it's not so self-serving. Yeah, which is exactly what, you know, a lot of the pharmaceutical companies, you know, they want to create drugs, and then they have so much money. This is my opinion, and I think it's a widely shared opinion that they can worry about the lawsuits later because they have so much money. It doesn't matter.
Well, one of the issues there, of course, is that you first of all need to get independent people to do the safety assessments to show that it's not safe when they say that it is. And then you have to have enough evidence that it's causing harm in people before the lawsuits can really begin. So there is often quite a long lag period between a pharmaceutical drug coming to the marketplace and finding enough evidence for that drug to actually be removed from the marketplace. So And pharmaceutical companies can certainly make quite a lot of money in the meantime. But the evidence of proof now is, it can be difficult to find to actually get it removed from the marketplace.
Yes. So let's go back to the study for a minute. I'm curious about one thing. Did you test the meat or did you just test the organs?
We looked at the organs. We didn't test the meat. That just went into the food suppliers, as happens in the United States. There are an awful lot of, most pigs in the United States are fed GM crops.
Yes.
And so most pork in your country has GM, comes from pigs that have been fed GM. I think you're probably talking about whether you might find GM DNA in the meat
right.
of the animals. Yeah. There have certainly been some studies done now that show that you can find traces of GM DNA in the meat of animals that have been fed GMOs. You can also find it in milk, in cows that have been fed GMOs. And in fact, there was a study done in Italy a few years back where they looked at milk on supermarket shelves and they were actually able to determine what GM crops the cows had been eating by looking in their milk. Now, years ago, and still a lot of regulators believe that you can't find GM DNA in refined foodstuffs from GM crops such as oils and starches and things like that, and nor can you find it in the meat from animals that have been fed GMOs. However, with new techniques to find smaller bits of GM DNA, you can indeed find it there.
Yeah, well, it just makes sense that it would be there. Now, in your country, you don't have GMO corn or soy. You have canola and cotton, right?
Yes, in terms of growing it here commercially, we do grow GM cotton, which comes into the human food supply as the oil that gets crushed out of the cotton seeds. And that comes into a lot of, deep fried foods.
Right.
We also have canola, which is grown in some states of Australia. Certain states, such as my state and Tasmania, actually have a ban on growing GM canola or any GM crop in the state. It's a state-by-state decision. Other states do grow GM canola, but it's still in the early days of uptake of the GM canola in those states. So it's certainly not a majority of GM canola that's grown in Australia, of the canola that's grown in Australia, a majority, my understanding is it's still not GM here. So it's early days really in Australia, but approval has not been given to grow GM soy and it's not been given to grow GM corn. One of the reasons for that probably is the difference in climate between your country and mine, and we don't tend to actually grow all that much corn or soy here because of the difference in climate.
Do you import?
We do.
So you import our grain?
We do import your grain. There's a lot of GM soy that's grown in South America as well. And so that does tend to get imported here. There are restrictions on that, though. You can't import whole grains. It needs to be crushed so it's not a viable organism. And then once it's crushed, it becomes into the human food supply, and that's regulated by a different organisation in Australia. We call it FSANS, Food Standards Australia New Zealand. And that then is allowed in here in the human food supply if FSANS says that it can come in.
Yeah. Are you concerned when you travel to our country about what you eat?
Yes, I am.
I bet you are. I have friends in Europe, and it's a concern when they come over here. They have to be very careful. It's not like they don't have any GMOs in Europe, because they certainly do, because they import our grain as well. But it's not as commercially on the shelves in the grocery store as it is here. So
the other main thing about that is that they, and both in Australia and in Europe, we have labeling laws, whereas in the United States you don't.
Right.
And so it's impossible for anyone in the United States to try and avoid GMOs in their food supply if they want to do that. It's much easier in Australia, and it's certainly even easier in the EU than it is in Australia, because In the EU, they also need to label oils, refined things such as oils, from crops that are GMO. So canola oil, for example, from a GM canola, does need to be labelled in the EU, whereas it doesn't need to be labelled here in Australia.
And my opinion of canola oil is that much of it is contaminated, cross-contaminated anyway. So I advise people don't even eat any canola oil.
Yes, in Australia, if you want to avoid GMOs completely, as long as you pick up food that is a product of Australia, and if it doesn't have canola or corn in it somewhere, or just vegetable oil, sort of generic vegetable oil, then you can be pretty well assured that you're not eating GMOs, whereas in the United States, you just wouldn't know. You could go to organic labelled materials, which would give you some protection, but even then, it may not give you complete protection.
Right, and I do a lot of food education and health and wellness coaching, and I just tell my clients, just avoid oils that aren't 100% extra virgin olive oil or coconut oil, because you can bet if a product says that it's got vegetable oil in it, there's going to be some factor, and probably the major portion of that oil is going to be genetically modified. So, you know, it's about reading labels, but educating the general public is, it's a big task, you know, to get people to look at every product and read the labels and all that. But I think, you know, once we get the GMO labeling going here, you know, pretty widespread as opposed to just a few states, that's really going to help.
Yes, and I think that I think it's important for people to have a right to know about whether a food that they're eating is GM, has GM ingredients in it or not. I think it's a basic democratic right that you should have in the United States, so that you can choose to avoid GMOs if you want to.
Right. And, you know, we have an initiative coming up in Washington. Actually, I think the ballots are going out this week for the labeling there, and when that passes, I think that'll be three states, and from there I really feel like it will snowball. So what's next for you, Judy, as far as the studies with GMO?
Well, hopefully I can do some more. I usually don't, I can't talk about any studies I may or may not be doing until they're actually published.
Well, we certainly applaud you for your work.
Yes, I only wish that the people who are trying to attack my paper had actually read some of the ones from the industry and had actually attacked them. They would have found an awful lot more wrong with their studies. But
right, that's unfortunately going to happen over and over again. So how can people learn more about your work and about this study and actually see a copy of the study? Would you let our listeners know that?
Yes, indeed. There is a website that's been set up by some people called GMO Judy Carman. And Carman is spelled C-A-R-M-A-N. And that has got a copy of the study on it. It's also got some of the comments that have been sort of attacks that have been levied against me and the study, and the reply to those comments, showing just how rubbish those comments are. So there are attacks on animal husbandry, there are on the way that the animals were housed, which just make no sense, and various things like that, various attacks, and we've been able to rebut them on the site, and there'll be several more rebuttals coming on the site very soon as well. So that's probably the best place. And when we talk about severe stomach inflammation, there's also a fairly graphic picture on that site showing what we mean by severe stomach inflammation.
Oh, great. And we'll also post a link to that site on our show page. So is that .org, GMOJudyCarman.org?
Yes, I believe it is.
Okay, great. And for our listeners, for those who want to actually look at the actual study, some more of Judy's work, check out that website. So thank you, Dr. Carman, for being a guest on our show and sharing this information with us and for doing the study. And again, the website is gmojudycarman.org. Go check it out. And we thank you for listening. And we We will be back next week with another great show.